91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Today we visit with a South Florida icon in many areas, from the political realm as a sometimes controversial elected official, from the world of modern art, from the important arena of community philanthropy, and even as a radio talk show host. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Ruth Shack embodies public service. She's shown love of community, served on a county commission, furthered human rights, extolled philanthropy, insisted on historical preservation, and has long been a leader in the world of fine art. She's helped lessen cultural alienation, and she's fought for even-handed human rights. So stay with us. Ruth Shack joins us in a few minutes after NPR and regional news. Seven minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman back with you on this Wednesday afternoon. So today's guest is a true figure in South Florida history for some five decades.
She's a pathfinder.
She's a pathfinder on many fronts and many levels. And the voice you just heard is Ruth Shack.
So let us count the ways she's been of such great effect. First, as a key three-term commissioner in what was then the Dade County Commission. Lots more of that in minutes.
Of course.
And as was her late husband, Richard Shack, her lifelong passion for the arts makes her one of the best-known authorities and modern art collectors in the region.
Then there's community philanthropy, the Miami Foundation, 24 years as its president and CEO, and Ruth Shack Bonnie once shared a vocation with us.
Yes.
A radio talk host.
Indeed.
Probably better than I.
And I. Welcome, Ruth Shack.
No, never. But I'm honored to be on with you two, who are real figures, as you're using that term, in Miami-Dade County. Anyone who knows anything about the county knows that your two names.
Well, thank you. But Ruth, I remember we used to pitch together. Yes. Do you remember that?
Oh, absolutely.
And we're not fundraise together, I should say. So I thought we'd begin with a little of your background, where you grew up, and your early passions, your early mentors, your early inspirations.
Well, I was born into what I love to call a Bolshevik family. These were passionate people about politics and ties to the old country. But both my mother and father were the only ones in their family to be born in the United States. So they were the great hope of both families, that they would carry them into the new world. And it was just very exciting to go to family gatherings and watch the discussions of flying back and forth with incredible passion. It was wonderful. And I decided that when I grew up, I wanted to be like that. When I was 5 years old, all little girls wanted to be Shirley Temple. I wanted to be Huey Long.
Wow.
He was a populist on the radio.
Kingfish.
He said stuff that is so far off the wall, but I just knew that he engendered the kind of passion in people who listened to him, exactly what I wanted to be able to do.
That's interesting, because your political aspirations actually go back then.
And they go back to when I was five, but they had to wait till I was 46, because in those days, girls did not go into politics. You could be Franklin Delano Roosevelt's wife, right, but you couldn't be FDR. And so I stuffed envelopes and walked the streets and worked for men who were running.
Would we know any of them? Were any of them national figures?
Yes, of course, but most of them were Miami-Dade.
Oh.
And that's where I cut my eye teeth. When I came here with Richard, my wonderful husband, on a honeymoon, we were given 2 weeks at a hotel on Miami Beach for a honeymoon, And we did 1 week honeymoon and found jobs the second week. We just decided this was where we were going to have a life together.
Now, when you two arrived, it was the year after Estes Kefauver.
Ah, yes.
And the gambling was being shut down.
Right.
And you kind of got involved in the nightclub booking and
well,
entertainment scene.
Richard had been in the entertainment business, was called back. He was in the Second World War and then called back into the Korean conflict, not to go to war, but to produce a show called The Armed Forces Hour. And so he did that, and then he was released finally. And as you say, we got married and we drove in a red Hudson convertible. Mm-hmm. I knew any guy who owned a red Hudson convertible was going to make me happy for the rest of my life.
Which he did.
He did.
How did you meet?
Blind date. My father and another person just put us together. I want to tell the outrageous story that after a half hour of being together in a bar in Manhattan, Richard announced we were going to get married. And I said, you know, that's really cute. I have heard lines.
You must have made some impression.
I backed out 2 years later.
Something else I read about, your mother was a designer.
Yes.
And she has a first in the refrigeration business. Tell us about that.
She was really a visionary, a pioneer. Up until the time she worked, refrigerators were white, enamel. That's what it was, white, shiny enamel. She came up with the idea of putting decorated something on the door so that when you walked into the room, you saw this decorated panel as opposed to the white enamel. So that's my mother's contribution to arts and letters.
That's great.
A precursor
that's great,
to Art Deco.
Yes. Well, and look where they are. Look where refrigerators went. They're
amazing.
Almost.
Yeah, it really is.
So here you are. You come on your honeymoon with Richard.
Yes.
To South Florida. You decide you're going to move here. But what?
We come to Miami Beach.
Miami Beach, and decide you're going to move here. But what a departure from New York. From New York.
Yes.
You know what made you even want to stay?
Well, it's a story I tell all the time. A friend who we knew from New York came. He had been here for a few years and came to the hotel to show us his town. And he had the top down on his convertible and the air conditioner going. And I figured, oh, this is pretty good
this is
stuff.
Nice.
This is all right. And then when he got out of his car, he had white patent leather shoes with no socks. I figured the combination of those two things, this was the kind of town I wanted to be in.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Talk a little about Miami back then. You're talking about 1950.
Well, as you mentioned, Joe, it was the time when Kefauver had pushed gambling underground. To the naked eye, gambling was gone. But
except on 79th Street Causeway.
And any place else
Hollywood,
they could get a door. Yeah, many of the hotels had gambling in the basement. And you had to know somebody. And again, that was glamorous and exciting. And then it just became no longer glamorous and exciting. And gambling kind of disappeared and became something rather tawdry, as opposed to what was a glamorous pursuit.
But there was also, I'm thinking of all the, in the 50s, it was restricted to Jews. Areas were restricted. Jews couldn't live
absolutely.
In them.
Oh, absolutely.
Blacks had their own water fountains.
There was blacks segregation. Could not sleep on the beach.
On the beach, exactly.
Richard, well, two stories. When we decided to stay, we started looking for places to live. And I don't know how many times we were told that we would not be comfortable living here, which meant you're Jewish and you don't belong.
Right.
We caught on pretty quickly. And the second was when Richard started booking, he brought some pretty exciting, wonderful black artists to perform in the clubs, and they had to be off the beach by dark.
And hence the popularity of the Sir John and Northwest 2nd Avenue.
Absolutely. Right. And Richard and I used to drive them back to Overtown to the hotels that you just mentioned. And on occasion, we were invited. We went upstairs to watch the entertainment.
And the real party
well,
began,
we were just thrilled to be invited at all. It was such a vibrant, exciting happening.
And when did you and Richard get interested, start this love affair with art? Was that
when we were, I'm going to use a word that most people don't know, I was courting, which meant we were dating pretty seriously in New York, in Manhattan. And where we found ourselves more often than not was in art galleries, in museums, looking at art. And we realized that along with a whole lot of other interests, we had a real interest in contemporary art. And when we came to Miami, if you didn't go to the University of Miami, there really wasn't very much to see.
The Lowe Museum.
Well, at that time, it was the Joe and Emily Lowe Art Gallery. And one of Richard's contributions was putting together the grant which allowed that art gallery to become a museum. So it became the Lowe Museum.
We're speaking with, if you don't mind my saying, the legendary Ruth Shack.
Oh, that makes me old.
No, that doesn't mean that. She's a community and human rights activist for years, responsible for really shaping Miami's cultural revolution and evolution. We're going to take a short break, and she was also the recipient of Miami's Cultural Champion Award just last month, 2016. A short break, and we'll be right back.
And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, and we're reminiscing and having a little profile of Ruth Shack, a pathfinder on many fronts and many levels here in South Florida.
And speaking of profile, so yes, what do we have here, Ruth?
We have a very, very nice drawing of a fairly good-looking woman.
I saw it on desk this morning.
What are you doing with a picture of me?
Well, I'll tell you. Where is this picture from?
This picture was just made as a kind of thank you by Marty Kreloff, a terrific artist who had been here years ago and then went off to parts unknown and resurfaced a few years ago. And has done some wonderful, wonderful portraits of arts people and people in town. This was given to me when I got the Arts Champion,
Cultural Champion Award
at the Gibraltar Bank. Adolfo Enriquez sponsored a splendid celebration.
Well, shall we talk to Marty?
Oh, yes. I'd love to.
Oh, Marty, how are you?
Hello, sweetheart.
I am just grand. You should see this picture. It's really very nice.
Oh, I saw it.
I think he's seen it.
Ruth, I love you.
You are so sweet. You were so important in Miami for so many years, introducing people to the concept of art and the fact that you could have fun with art. That there was nothing intimidating about it.
But Marty, what did she? Ruth is saying how important you were to Miami. How important was Ruth, or were Ruth and Richard to your career?
This had better be good, Marty.
I'm gonna.
I know where you live.
I can. let me say that I had my first solo show in 1974, and the first portrait that I did of Ruth was 1975, and. Getting a portrait commission from the Shacks was a big deal. It talked about their belief in my art, and other people believed it too. And it just started to make me into someone that had a unique perspective on portraiture and just loved doing what I do. But I think that Ruth, you and Richard opened doors for me that I may have opened them later, but you opened them early for me and have always been supporters. And I just love you. I think of you as my mentor, my lifelong friend, and my patron. I mean,
thank you, my friend. And you know that piece that you talk about, the first portrait,
Yes. Is
at the downtown Miami Public Library.
They
have a wonderful art collection, and for some strange reason, they wanted that image.
Oh,
I was thrilled.
That's just delightful.
Yes, yes.
I have to, if I may briefly share, when I was asked if I could come up with a drawing of you, and they sent me the photo, first of all, I said, of course, I'd be delighted to. But as I was drawing you, Ruth, I knew those lines. I knew everything about your face from... Oh, it was almost magical. It sounds strange, but as I was drawing, I said, "Yes, of course. This, of course. Yes." It's just like you were ingrained. I mentioned it to several people when I was working. I said, "I really know Ruth Shack's face. I loved doing it. It took me to another time."
You are so generous. Thank you so much.
I'm happy that you love it, and I think it's just a small thing. Many people owe you much. You've changed the face of Miami. I certainly was there when you were a Metro Commissioner, and we worked hard together at stopping that darn Anita Bryant.
Well, we're going to get to that.
Thanks for checking in, though.
Marty, thank you so much for calling in. It's a beautiful portrait.
Thank you so much, Ruth. I love you, dear.
Thank you, Marty.
Bye-bye, honey.
Well, we can't jump ahead to the Miami Commission yet. I mean, what about you and Richard and trying your own hand at art? I heard that Richard took lessons from Marty.
No, both Richard and I signed up for art lessons to learn what we had on the walls. We knew what we had. We thought they were wonderful, and we wanted to know what the artist had gone through to create it. That's when we discovered that everything we had was impossible. I mean, that's when we got this incredible appreciation for artists and what they do, and the mind of an artist and the work that they produce is just so extraordinary. And as I say, we got tremendous respect just trying to do what they did.
By the way, I just want to say that Paul Leary has this picture up on our website. The picture will be there.
Oh,
so
really?
That everybody can see it. Yes.
Oh.
WLRN.org. Ruth, could you set the scene in the mid-1970s and how you became to become elected to the commission and what the political vibes were then?
Well, at the time I had been working, as I said, for a whole lot of people who wanted to be elected to public office, was very active in starting the Women's Political Caucus and a number of political groups in town. Unfortunately, someone who was a malcontent vis-a-vis a zoning issue pointed a finger at three county commissioners, and they were indicted and removed from their seat. Reuben Askew then called and asked me if he appointed me, would I run for the seat? And I said, absolutely, which was the wrong answer. He wanted a caretaker. So I then mounted a campaign and started running for what I thought was going to be an open seat, because the person who he appointed, Sandy Rubenstein, I assumed had promised she would not run. She did. There were 9 of us in the race. I ended up in a runoff with Sandy and beat her. It was very, very heady, very exciting. In those days, we ran countywide. You came from a particular district, but each of the 9 commissioners, 8 commissioners and mayor, all ran countywide. So no matter where you were in Miami-Dade County, you were supposed to be someplace else. I mean, it was a Herculean effort.
How were politics, or how are politics compatible with the arts?
Well, all right, an example. At one point, the staff of the county commission came to the commission with an idea of the tourist tax. And this was the fact that hotels and restaurants would add a little increment, a tax to the bill to the tourist. And that money came to the county, and it would be used to build tourism in Miami-Dade County. And when they presented it, the staff said, and we'll take 20% for sports. And I said, and we'll take 20% for the arts.
Hence the art in public places.
No, that's a different program. No, this is the 20% of the tourist tax that supports all of the tourism arts organizations who make application for a grant. It's a huge amount of money. It's an ongoing support of arts. And it was nothing that the staff thought. They thought sports generated tourism. We have since proven with Art Basel and all of the festivities that we have in town that art does indeed bring tourism to town. So that's being in the right place at the right time and saying what you think. That's the joy of being in an elected position, being able to do that.
And we'll talk about the art in public places, because that was another thing.
Yeah, that was a program that came out of Jack Orr, who was the mayor, you'll remember, Joe.
In the 60s. And
he had vacationed in Hawaii and saw this remarkable program and came back and said, we will have it in Dade County. And it was indeed the set-aside of at least 1.5% of the construction of every public building set aside for art in that building. And
including the airport.
Well, that's later
funny
on.
Yeah.
The first were the public buildings. And we were hot in the building of all of the what was the Decade for Progress bond issue, gave us money for fire stations, police stations, libraries, primary health care centers, community centers were being built all over Dade County. So a minimum of 1.5% went to each of them. When we were building the transit, they insisted, the staff insisted, they were not buildings, they were stations. And I said, you're playing games with me now. I want to have some art in those wonderful places that are going to sit in neighborhoods around Dade County. Mm-hmm. And no, they insisted they were stations until later on when they were describing something. One of the staff said, and in the building, and I said, we got them.
You caught them.
Gotcha. So we have, and out at the airport, the art out there is again wonderful. And I just came home from my second great-grandchild's birth, and coming through the airport and looking at the art is really so invigorating and exciting. It's a welcome to Miami. We're different than every place else.
How about Frank Borman, the astronaut and
the
at
Rosenquist.
That time, the head of Eastern Airlines,
Bacon
in Space.
Great frustration, because he had no reason to make an opinion about the art. Eastern Airlines rented space in the public-owned airport. I mean, we all pay taxes. We all own the airport. So it was up to us, the people of Dade County, to make a decision about what goes in. Rosenquist had created this magnificent piece. We were able to get it for a few hundred thousand. It was going to be a major piece. Borman said that he had, it was called Star Thief. Boy, this is coming back. And in the piece, there was a piece of cooked bacon, you should know, and it was flying. And Borman, as you remember, said, I've been to space, and there's no bacon in space. And it became a major story. So Star Thief, that piece that we turned down because Frank Borman had been to space and we had not, is now on the wall in some museum, and is worth I don't know how many millions of dollars.
We're speaking with Ruth Shack, longtime community and human rights activist, and maybe best known as the sponsor of the 1977 Human Rights Ordinance in Miami-Dade County, which we haven't gotten to yet, but we will after this short break.
Hi, I'm Nita Bryant.
Florida's sunniest sweetheart.
Come to the Florida Sunshine Tree.
Had us in her sights.
Orange juice naturally.
The war goes on to save our children because the seed of sexual sickness that germinated in Dade County has already been transplanted by misguided liberals in the U.S. Congress.
Poor thing. She didn't know what she was up against. We got stronger.
Well, first of all, Anita is our ally. Quite honestly, she's the number one recruiter to the gay lifestyle in the country.
Louder.
The issue in this election is a simple one. If we take these rights away from one segment of our population, whose rights do we take away next?
And prouder. Today, oranges are no longer the only fruit South Florida is famous for. And it's a great place to be different. Thank you for celebrating 9 years with us.
Love is the answer.
Welcome to the 9th Miami Gay and Lesbian Film Festival.
And of course, you probably know the story, but we're going to get it from the the horse's mouth. Do I want to say
thanks
no?
Thanks a lot.
We're back with Ruth Shack. Legendary Ruth Shack, longtime community and human rights activist and civil rights activist. And that was her voice that you heard. She introduced the then very controversial 1977 Human Rights Ordinance. Ruth, tell us about it.
Well, when I decided I was going to run for county commission, which we covered just a few minutes ago, organizations then set themselves up as screening, and you go and you convince this group that indeed you are a friend of whatever it may be, education. Well, I'm not going to get into it.
Editorial boards and organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. And you call it screening. One of the more interesting screenings was 4 or 5, I can't remember, and don't press me for names, men who introduced the concept of this amendment to the ordinance. There were 5 of us who were running at the time. All 5 pledged to support that the amendment to the ordinance. When I was elected, they came to me and asked if I would introduce it. And I said, certainly, it was the right thing to do. And so I introduced it at first hearing. I got the 5 votes that I expected. And
there wasn't any big deal about it, though.
It was a yawner, as we say.
But explain what it was, this ordinance.
What it said was that if you were gay, you were a human being, and you could not be fired, you could not be pushed out of your house for the reason of being gay. That was verboten. The same way that you can't be fired because you're too tall or too short or too skinny, you couldn't be fired because you were gay. So in housing and jobs and life, we were saying that gays deserve the same kind of lifestyle that we all had.
Right.
And again, the first hearing was quiet. When we went for the second hearing, it was the day it snowed in Miami, which is a wonderful
January
video.
January 19th, I think.
As I pulled out of my driveway to drive to the commission, I got these flakes on my windshield, and coming from the north, I knew exactly what it was, and I figured, okay, this is the end of life as I understand it. And it was,
and
for
it was.
Me, the end of life. Anita Bryant, who had been a client of Richard's, he had created the orange commission.
Okay.
Yeah, the citrus commission. He negotiated the deal for Anita. He put together a spectacular career for her. Her husband and her church minister convinced her that this was a bad thing to do.
The ordinance.
The ordinance was the enemy of life as they understood it. It was very strange because the guy who did her hair, the woman who did her nails, the people who surrounded her in her career were all gay, and she knew that. But she was convinced that this would be a good thing to oppose it. I had for years said that she was the only victim. The gay community was able to come out of the shadows and support the ordinance. The straight community hid under the bed. The silent majority, which is what they called themselves at that time, organized as opposition. And while it passed at the commission, they mounted a recall, and it was indeed recalled. And
how long after?
Months.
Okay.
To mount the campaign and to go through another election. It was roundly defeated. There was no question. I, however, the next year got myself reelected. People did not hold this against me, although at the time I got death threats. As a matter of fact, the county commission declared a Ruth Shack Day. It gave me a proclamation because they knew this was the end of my political career.
Oh.
But I fooled them. I got reelected a third time, and life went on. Too many years later, the commission revisited the issue and passed
1998.
So right. So 70, more than 20 years later, it took for.
Why did it take so long? Why did it take 20 years to get it repealed?
Well, I approached the issue as a civil rights issue. Discrimination was what I saw. And I was against discrimination for women, for gays, for anyone who suffered from discrimination, Jews, Catholics, Poles, anybody had at one point in their lives known what discrimination was. And I thought that they would warm to this. They would understand what I was talking about. But it turned very, very quickly into a sex issue. And the debates with Anita Bryant and a representative of his own interests argued whether heterosexual or homosexual sex was best. And
oh my God.
I was out of there. I wanted no part of that.
So is that when did you leave the commission?
No.
Oh, you're talking about just that.
Yeah, I was not going to debate either of those issues. That simply wasn't what I was talking about. And so, no surprise, we lost and got no support from anybody out there. It was just amazing. As you say, it took 20-some-odd years for people to understand that this was discrimination and that they had an axe to grind, that they should be a part of it.
And you say that she was the real loser because other groups and individuals benefited by it.
And
she lost her career, essentially.
Right. Exactly.
And
right.
Her husband and her family.
Well, her kids stayed with her. But I am told that she still has a website, and if you send her money, she'll do away with gays. So you may want to look that up. Yeah.
You know,
it's very sad.
Yeah. But as I looked at your life in preparing for this program, it made me just wonder what forces shaped you. What makes you stand up and fight for what's right or what's beautiful or what's fair?
Well, it was just the right thing to do. There was never a question about whether or not it was something I had to do. I just knew it. It was the right thing to do. And I think it goes back to when I was 5 and 6 and 7 and went to family gatherings and saw my family at the top of their lungs defending what they thought was right. Mm-hmm. And I may have or may not have disagreed or agreed with them, but the sheer force of looking for the right thing, I think, stayed with me and has made it a life worth living.
And just a little bit later, after all of that hullabaloo, you really began in 1981 as far as historic preservation from the county commission. Mm. So those who are going to South Beach now might need to know that there's something that to be owed to Ruth Shack for all of that.
That I think, you know, when people ask me my toughest political battle, I think that was it. I mean, I knew in the gay rights controversy that I was right, and that sooner or later it would straighten itself out. In the historic preservation, the people who owned hotels on Miami Beach that they called old and ugly, mm-hmm. and wanted to rip down so they could put up cinder blocks that looked like every other city.
The last station before God business.
Amen. And they came to the commission and didn't threaten my life as the anti-gays did, but they threatened my political career. I bought this building, I own this building, I know what I'm going to do with this building, and you keep your hands off. And I was anxious to keep some character in Miami. The stone houses that are so remarkable and so Miami, to use the term, the drive along Southwest 8th Street and the wonderful relics of when that was the heyday. The pine houses in Homestead that were ready to be ripped down and replaced with plastic. And so I fought, and we won that one.
Yeah.
We've won a lot of battles. We haven't even gotten to the Dade Community Foundation, now known as the Miami Foundation. We have a lot more to cover.
No battle there.
No battle there, thank goodness. Speaking with Ruth Shack, and she is the recipient of this year's Cultural Champion Award. For obvious reasons, the Miami Cultural Champion Award. A short break, and we'll be right back.
And we return with today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and we continue our profile of Ruth Shack. Ruth, with your contacts from your political career and your community affairs and the arts world, I guess no one really was in a better position to promote philanthropy seriously in Miami-Dade County when you took over. How did that become about?
Well, first you have to educate people to what philanthropy is and what the difference between philanthropy and charity. Charity is I need a sweater, I'll give you the money for a sweater. Philanthropy is let me help you earn the sweater and keep the sweater. You don't have to borrow from anyone. You can do it yourself. Philanthropy builds. And it was very exciting to go to the foundation from the commission because I had campaigned on every street corner. I knew people of means. I had asked them for money for my campaign. So it was shifting skills, but using the same ideas. And it's just been a remarkable experiment. The whole idea of building an endowment, money that will never be touched, but the earnings spent in the community for good work, is just a remarkable idea. And we were able to build it. It was really very, very rewarding.
Run that by again. You built the endowment, so it's self-sustaining.
Well, let me use words that are not euphemisms. I raised money that went into the bank and was never used, but the interest from that money went out into grants to the community.
And it's self-sustaining.
Still is. And that's and this continues now with the Miami Foundation.
Oh, absolutely. Foundation. And it well, when I, after 24 years, I was dealing with the sons and daughters of my buddies, and I took the hint that I was to move on. So I told the board I was retiring, and at the new administration changed the name from the Dade Community Foundation to the Miami Foundation, but the endowment has continued to grow. They've continued to raise more and more money, which means there's more money to distribute. And an anecdote, I had to fill in a blank for something I don't remember what. What is your profession? Retired. Retired from what? Asks the man. Well, philanthropy. Well, what's philanthropy? Dade Community Foundation, never heard of it. They do the Miami Gives Day.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I know them.
Right.
So it touches people in all different ways, and that's really wonderful.
Years ago, Topical Currents received a stipend to produce a series on the community's hospice services, a 10 or 12-part series. And
wonderful.
That was funded by the foundation at
indeed.
That time.
Indeed. Terrific.
What were some of the, maybe this is too hard to answer, you were there so many years, but some of the causes that you were able to endow that meant the most to you?
Well, I think, I know we were the first in Miami-Dade County to fund AIDS education prevention. This is one of my favorites. We gave money to the public library system so they could restore the original Raggedy Ann and Andy dolls that are displayed in Coral Gables, just to show the breadth of the grants that we were able to make. The imperative was to build community, to get people talking to each other over boundaries. Started a wonderful program. About 150 people now are a part of the Miami Fellows. We're a professional between the ages of about 25 to 35 apply on their own. No one can nominate them. And they tell us why they are leaders in the community. And then we help push them through the pipeline faster. So we have city managers, we have mayors, we have heads of hospitals, we have more attorneys than the world needs.
So it's to further the best and brightest, to, no matter what their backgrounds are.
And hopefully to civic work, that they will then recognize that in addition to making a good living on their own part, they have a responsibility to Miami-Dade County and to make certain that its needs are listened to.
And what is the Ruth Shack Leadership Award?
Young, bright people early in their careers are not so early in their careers are recognized for their leadership integrity and all good things. And one a year is honored. And
we've had some of those recipients on the program. Yeah.
Wonderful. And their name, Ruth Shack.
Yeah.
Good woman.
Good woman. What are your, I wish we had another hour. What are the your favorite things in your life today?
Today. Meeting with young, bright people. It's not mentoring because it's not that intense, but it's at a moment when they need advice, they need thoughts, they need to know the past in Miami. They need a kick in the rear end, and I am delighted to provide it. That's just so wonderful. I am so bullish about the future of this community.
And the arts in this community?
Well, no question about it. I mean, we are just bursting with energy and talent in the arts community. They tell the story about how we used to go visit the artists in their studios, all five of them. Now there are five on every block. It's just wonderful, the kind of talent that is bubbling up all over Miami.
But we still see the gentrification. We see them losing Wynwood now, as they lost Lincoln Road.
Someone said to me that they just bought property in West Wynwood. I said, where's West Wynwood? I never heard of that. He gave me the cohort. I said, you bought in Alapata. So Yes, you're right. The neighborhoods are turning around very, very fast. This is a tough place to be poor. This is not a very friendly place for people who can't afford to live here. That's our segregation.
Being at once one of the richest cities and also one of the poorest cities in the country.
I live in one of the richest buildings in Miami-Dade County, and within a mile are some of the poorest people in Dade County. And until we come to some equitable distribution of the riches that are here, we're going to have that forever.
Well, I don't know if you would like to, but I would ask you if you would share your thoughts about the political landscape, both locally, statewide, and nationally right now.
In 10 words or less.
You have two minutes.
No, I'm heartbroken at what's happened to the political system. I'm heartbroken at what people expect of their government. Someone was quoted on television last night. I was watching the returns. She voted for Trump because he's not a part of the establishment. Well, you know, from my point of view, he represents the establishment. So the complete lack of understanding, people hate politicians because they're political. Well, that's the system. That's what makes it work. And it just breaks my heart that there is so little understanding.
And statewide? And just
I'm just talking just generically about the electoral system. And it has a whole lot to do with the quality of people who are willing to run. Every so often I will say to these young people, why don't you run for office? And they say, I thought you liked me. You know, there is this feeling that that you're giving up. And indeed you are. You got to be very, very courageous to go into politics today.
Well, we're glad you did. It did. Ruth Shack, largely responsible for shaping Miami's cultural evolution and revolution, may be best known as the sponsor of the 1977 Human Rights Ordinance in Miami-Dade County. She was a three-term county commissioner. She proposed an amendment to the county's existing anti-discrimination law to prohibit discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, and it passed. Among all the things, she became president and CEO of one of the largest philanthropic organizations, the Dade Community Foundation, now the Miami Foundation, and was just the recipient of Miami's Cultural Champion Award 2016, honoring her pioneering leadership.
Thank you. This was wonderful.
It's been our pleasure. Thank you so much for coming.
And thank you for the two of you. Keep going.
Thank you.
And thank you for being with us this hour. Our lead producer, Richard Ives, technical supervision from online producer Paul Leary. Polly Landis is associate producer. Listen again to Topical Currents online. Free downloads at our website, WLRN.org. Also, check out the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program should appeal to the large number of boomers who have chronic knee trouble. Most are treatable. Added pounds translate to added knee pressure. Also, Linda Gassenheimer with news about the cool Wynwood Yard Miami Food Hub and an all-plant-based diet. And much more.
And thank you, Paul, for that sound clip. It was great.
Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.